This episode is brought to you by Pete's. Few things start your day better than a good coffee. That's why Pete's hand-roasts their coffee from a specific selection of high-quality beans. And they don't just put those beans into anyone's hands. Pete's trains their roasters for 10,000 hours so they can master the roast that gives you the most. Pete's Coffee. Coffee for coffee people. Find Pete's online or at your local retailer.
Hosted on dimlywit.com.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Tina.
And this is
Obsessed with the Best.
We're two New York City gals who are bringing you the best of the best of all things beauty, wellness, and inspirational women.
We've tried it all and can't wait to tell you what's worth obsessing over.
Join us each week as we share our favorite products and trends and chat with leading female founders and experts.
Welcome to Obsessed with the Best with Alex and Tina.
Today, we are sitting down with Jen Waldman. Jen is the founder and director of JWS, New York's premier training studio for Broadway actors. She actually began her career as an actor herself, appearing on Broadway in Titanic and Wicked. In addition to her work with artists, Jen is a speaker and consultant for organizations across the globe. She has spent over two decades as a multi-hyphenate in the theater industry, serving as an artistic director, producer, director, choreographer, educator, acting coach, and she is also the co-host of the podcast, The Long and the Short of It. Jen is going to fit right in on this podcast. Here's Jen Waldman. Jen, we are so excited to have you here. I met Jen in person doing your makeup with Michael yes. Kushner, friend of the podcast, Michael Kushner. But I've heard you've been in my vocabulary and in my world for many, many years. Anytime I was asking friends, you know, who are you studying with? Who are you going to? I feel stuck in my career or this, that, the other thing. Every single time it was, you got to go to Jen Waldman. You got to go to Jen Waldman. You are like at the top of everyone's list. So we feel so honored to have you here today.
I am so honored to be here today.
Yes.
Jen, I realize that my first introduction to you was years ago when you did my friend Annalisa's podcast, A Balancing Act.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love her.
I love her too. And I remember you being on my radar. And then I think the pandemic, I just lost track of, I don't know. But anyway, I remember loving that episode and just being like, I need to write her name down. I need to follow her. So I was already somehow following you from those days.
I love it.
Yes. And we've given our listeners just like a little bit of background about you, what you do, all the multi-hyphenates that you take on. But something that I really admire about you is that you're a coach that you've actually walked the walk. Like you're not just somebody that hasn't done the thing. You've been on Broadway. You've been a professional actor. Can you tell us what your journey was like getting there and how did you transition into where you are now?
Yeah. You know, so much of my Broadway career happened so early and in such a compact period of time. And I really feel like it was so I could say to my now clients, I swear it's totally possible for things to be great. Like, I swear it's possible to have an ideal agent-client relationship or to reach out to someone and to have them feel great about you reaching out. But anyway, I started as a dancer when I was a kid. And after some unfortunate water skiing accident, I ended up off my foot for almost a year. And my mother was like, we gotta get some of this kid's energy out in some other way. So she put me in voice lessons. And that was where everything sort of came together. And I was like, wait a minute, I could sing and dance and act at the same time? So musical theater became my path at that point. I went to college for a degree in musical theater performance at Ithaca College. And while I was there, another unfortunate accident. And this time it was the other foot. So I was off of that foot for a really long time. And my mentor in college, an amazing woman named Mary Corsaro, who's actually coming to visit me this week all these years later, Mary was like, you could sit there and feel bad about yourself, or you could look at this as a learning opportunity. And I'm going to take you under my wing. I'm going to teach you everything I know about choreography. I'm going to teach you everything I know about dance notation. You're going to basically be my assistant. So while I was off my foot and I couldn't dance, I was learning all of these amazing skills. And at the time, you know, there weren't iPhones. It wasn't like you could just pull out a video camera and film someone dancing. You had to write down every single step. Mm-hmm. So when I graduated from college, I had this skill set that I guess I didn't realize how much it was needed, but my very first job after I graduated college was in the Broadway musical Titanic, and I was a swing. I was covering 11 different roles. And then my next job after that, I became the dance captain of Titanic. So I had these two horrible experiences, which actually turned out to be these pivotal moments that gave me everything I needed in order to begin this career. So I did the acting and dance captaining thing for a while. I then moved into direction and choreography. I didn't give up the acting. I was doing it all at the same time. And then in 2004, I think it was, I joined the cast of Wicked on Broadway. This was very early in the run. And kind of by accident, the same week I joined Wicked, I started what is now Jen Waldman Studio, or JWS. So I was having those two paths going on at the same time. So anyway, it's a much longer story, but that's it in a nutshell. I had all of these experiences that sort of proved to me early on, you can do many things.
You can do hard things, as Glennon Doyle says.
Yes.
That's so cool, the choreography piece. That is such mm-hmm. a special skill to be able to notate yeah. dance and also to communicate that to someone. Right. I mean, I do feel like that having that as your basis really informs me a lot of why you are so good at communicating with people. Mm. Like if you've learned that so early on when you're so young, that's so cool. I didn't realize that it was kind of like two injuries that yeah. led you to explore other things.
Yeah, it really was. And of course, at the time I was like, this is the worst possible thing that could have ever happened. What I've learned now, you know, I'm going to be 48 on my next birthday. So, you know, time has taught me a lot. Back in those days, I would have said, you know, this horrible thing is happening to me. Now I realize that the people in my life helped me to say, oh, this thing is happening. It's not that it's happening to me. It's just happening. So I can like figure out a way to move with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and the universe really just pivoting you in a different direction and getting you back on track to where you need to be, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So you mentioned Jen Waldman Studio, which is such a renowned studio now in New York City, and the best of the best people are there. When you go to the website, though, there's so many things that you offer. It has grown into this wonderful community. Can yeah. you expand on everything that the Jen Waldman Studio offers?
Yes, and I know that one of your missions is to talk to founders, and so maybe at some point we will circle back to, I think naming it Jen Waldman Studio was like the worst idea I could have ever
Wait, why?
Well, at the time, I was just copying what other people who taught acting were doing. It was like so-and-so's name followed by the word studio, and I was like, okay, I guess that's what you do if you're an acting teacher. Now I realize it's so not about me. It's about the people who come here. So it's hard at this point to make the change. But in recent years, I've like been trying so hard to just say JWS. Like we changed our website. Mm. We used to be Jen Waldman Studio. Now we're JWS.community, which I think is like to your point, there's so much more that we do here besides offering really great training for actors, which of course we do. But there is this incredible sense of community, incredible sense of camaraderie. The amount of support that I witness these artists giving each other every day truly fills me with so much joy and hope for the future. And again, it's not about me. It's that this group of artists, and they're unique, of course, but they're also not unique in that anyone who comes to New York to act has this in them. They want a place where they can feel great about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So they've decided really to create the kind of community where people can take big risks, people can fail big, people can soar to never before seen heights. They treat each other with so much respect. There's an incredible sense of confidence and confidentiality within the group. I mean, they love on each other hard. It's awesome.
Yeah. And it is theater centered, but is it, what about someone who, so like I'm more of a commercial print and I go in for more on camera work. Like, do you have, is it other kind of spots in the business too? Or do you mostly have just theater actors?
Well, our technical training is in a theater-centered way. So if you're coming here for acting, you know, that's my background. So that's really what I know and what I can teach really well. But I also offer classes that aren't performance-based. Every January, I teach a class called Shift, which is essentially a mindset workshop. And I have people of all different varieties. Most of them are artists, but once in a while, an entrepreneur will come and take Shift. Sometimes it'll be someone who's in a management position within an organization. They'll come and take Shift. I do a lot of business strategy coaching for artists, which doesn't matter which industry you're in.
Right.
You know, if you're working on how you're communicating with people and meeting people, I can help you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. That clears up my question. Because I was like, I know you have people from all disciplines. Mm-hmm. And like, what are they taking? Okay. So it's more of the business and this mindset class. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. And the truth is, if you are an artist in any discipline or any particular medium, of course, you have an expertise in that area, but one of the things that I find really fascinating about the group that comes here, I'm sitting in the studio right now, which is why I said here, the group that comes here, they are interested in experimenting. So we have opportunities for someone who has only ever done theater, for example, to dabble in film. This is something we were doing big time during the pandemic. Or I teach this, it's not really teach, I sort of facilitate this creative space called Create, where people come in and they work in different disciplines. They write, they dance. I've had people bake in that class. We've done floral arrangements. Like, people try all different modes of artistic expression. And I do think that's really special about what we've got going on here.
Recently, we interviewed the co-founder of Avani Derm Spa and Nayak Plastic Surgery, Avani Nayak. Avani is a skincare expert who gave us all the secrets to aging gracefully, and whatever she's doing, it's working because she looks 20 years younger than she is. Avani has her very own skincare line that is full of medical-grade products that will really and truly change your skin. I'm currently obsessed with the Koji Pads. They help erase sunspots and texture, and they're also great for hyperpigmentation. And they're gentle enough for me to use every day. And the other thing I'm loving is the Youthful Glow Growth Factor Serum. Avani uses this serum regularly in place of her eye cream. This serum stimulates new cell development and helps to improve the appearance of aging skin in one use. Yes, one use. And I'm here to tell you, that is the truth. Honestly, my skin has never looked better. So for 10% off any of Avani's products anytime, go to dermspastore.com and enter code OBSESSED10 at checkout. That's www.dermspastore.com and OBSESSED10 at checkout. For more information, just scroll down to the bottom of the show notes for this episode.
Can you expand on that a little bit with like taking people who maybe aren't necessarily artists, but somebody who might be in finance or somebody who is the leader of their company, how being creative, how adding these artistic qualities into their world, how does that benefit really any organization or any person in a leadership position?
This is like an obsession of mine.
Well, you came to the right place to share your obsession.
I know. I am obsessed with this idea of bringing art into artless spaces and helping people to realize that every single person on the planet was born with creativity and might just not have the tools or the environment to access it in the way they want to, but everyone could access it if they had the right equipment. So when I look at what's going on within organizations that aren't necessarily, quote, creative organizations, like I do work with people in education, healthcare, finance, like all sorts of other industries, you hear people all the time talking about, how do I have difficult conversations? How do I help people get on board with a vision that I have for our company's future? How do I get more innovation on my team? And I didn't realize this maybe until 10, 12 years ago. Literally all of the skills that an actor has apply to those problems. When you're looking for more innovation on a team, it's really easy to try to, you know, throw money at the problem, like hire a director of innovation. Or you could go to your team and say, let's do some creative work together and see what we can get out of what we've already got here. Mm-hmm. Like, there's brilliance on this team. Let's figure out how we can access it. Or having a difficult conversation requires so much empathy, so much listening, so much focus on the other person. That is literally what acting is: empathy, mm-hmm. listening, focusing on the other person. So I kind of had this aha moment, like, oh my gosh, what I'm doing over in the theater world, it applies everywhere else.
So that's such a great point. Just, yeah. And it's like the I want. We all are going after something. We all have something that we're motivated by.
Yes.
You're so right. It is applicable to everything.
And the empathy of how can I say what I really need to say that's very truthful and honest, but that's in a straightforward but a kind way. Mm-hmm. And also, how can I get this group of people rallying behind a goal? So that means I need to articulate it in a way that also makes them as excited as I'm excited. Like, these are just life skills.
Yeah.
I love what you said about putting creativity in artless spaces. So you said in a podcast I was listening to that you feel like what you do is teach people how to have, or coach people how to have, the courage to be creative.
Right.
And that just, I thought that was so well articulated, because a lot of people are walking around with some amazing mm-hmm. ideas and some amazing thoughts, some amazing talents, but we stop ourselves from kind of putting it out there. And I mean, that could be a writer, a painter, or like you said, just bringing in a new idea to your finance company about the website or something. You know, we stop ourselves. So can you expand on that and why that's so important to you?
Yes. So for so many years, I really thought my job was acting teacher, acting coach. And then I was like, but wait a minute, I'm not really working with beginners. Like, that's not who my studio is for. People come to me already trained for the most part. So what am I actually doing? Yes, we focus on technique and depth and all of that. But most of the time, what I'm trying to do is help them find the courage to say their idea out loud, to share a particular take on a character, to try this thing they hadn't tried before. So I am as much a courage coach as I am an acting coach and a creativity coach. And what I realized is, I mean, maybe this is too basic a statement about the entire human condition, but I really feel like all of our fears go into two buckets. One is the fear of death, and two is the fear of other people's opinions.
Oh, that's completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think the fear of death part, the things that go along with that, the behaviors that go along with that, for the most part, it's like, on the good side, it keeps us safe. Like, crossing the street, I'm going to pick up my speed when I see the little red guy flashing on the sign. That's good fear that's keeping me safe. But the fear of people's opinions, that's the kind of fear that's keeping me stuck. That's the kind of fear that when I have something to say, I go, oh, but this other person might not like it or want it or need it. So I should just hold on to the idea. Even if I think it's good, I'm so afraid of what other people are going to think that I don't say anything. And then sometimes the fear of people's opinions, people is actually me, or like my past self or my future self is going, but really you think that, or really you want that? So much of the work that I'm doing is helping people hear what that inside voice is wanting to get out there, or hear what their heart is telling them. And then I try to give them the tools to be able to share it outward.
Right. Because it could be anything. It could be an Instagram reel. It could be an opinion at a meeting. And I think that people think that Tina and I maybe don't have this fear of putting something out there because we're always putting ourselves out there in different ways. but we do, because I think this is something everyone has. Like for me, it's a constant, it's kind of like a hill or like a ring of fire. Like I have an idea and I'm like, all right, Alex, just jump over, mm-hmm. just jump over the hurdle of being scared to put it out there. You know, like we all have this.
Yeah. I have it every day.
Yeah.
I'd be worried if you didn't. I'd be like, wait, who are you? If you have this all figured out already.
Right.
I'm wondering like, oh my gosh, this is so, it's resonating so much with me right now about the inner critic. And like you said, Alex, like someone like us, like, I don't want to say public figures, but you know, we have a platform, you've got a platform where I feel like I'm constantly exposing myself and putting myself out there. And I keep waiting to get like stronger and better at it, but it still feels like so hard and so vulnerable. And is there anything that you would say to someone like us or someone like me that is struggling with that? Just like, I'm exhausted from being out there all the time and being exposed.
Yes. First of all, I feel you so hard on this because I hate having this public facing thing. Like hate is a very strong word, but I am so uncomfortable with it. I'm 250 episodes into my own podcast and every week I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe we're putting this out there. It's scary every single week. Yeah, it's crazy. So I think the first thing is that if you never feel that fear, if you're never experiencing the, oh my gosh, am I actually going to risk this? You're probably not growing and changing and having new experiences, which is why the feeling never goes away. If you're a person who seeks new experiences and learning and growth, you're constantly having these new inputs, which are creating these new ideas for outputs. So this fear of sharing is just going to be with you for the rest of your life.
Cool.
And one of the things you could do is reframe it instead of like, oh my gosh, it's the same old fear that I have. It's like, no, this is the new fear associated with the new thing that I'm doing. So this, the new episode we're putting out, or, you know, I had this big epiphany and I'm going to talk about it. It's not the old fear of the pre-epiphany. It's the new fear of the post-epiphany. So recognizing that all of it is associated with growing pains, I think is just a helpful thing. But the other important piece, which quite frankly, I hadn't paid attention to maybe until the last couple years, is actually listening to the difference between fear and burnout, because they are different. And if burnout is happening and it's actually harming your mental health, harming your physical health, harming your personal relationships, there is nothing wrong with taking a little bit of time off to replenish, reset, recalibrate the whole thing. And I don't think I really understood that until the last couple of years, frankly.
Mm-hmm. That's such an important distinction to make, because there's such a difference between I'm exhausted and I don't want to do this, but I'm forcing myself to do it. And on the other hand, oh my God, I'm so excited and I can't wait to do this, but I'm scared what this person might think because she did it first and she's better and she's been doing it forever. So she might, you know, that whole thing. Like those are so different.
But they can really manifest the same way.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like thinking about how I feel when I feel both those things. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's that pit in my stomach.
Yes.
It makes me want to throw up. Great. Cool. Yep.
Yes. Between the exhaustion, or is it the excitement? And I'm thinking of with going the excitement route where like it is fear. Like I'm thinking of a friend I have who has a 9-to-5, she has a 9-to-5 job, she's a mom. She really wants to experiment with some interior design. Mm-hmm. And like that's like a new, like people who want to try new venture. And I think something else besides getting scared of people's opinions is also like, well, what if I try something and then I don't like it, but then I've told people that I'm doing it. And then if I don't like it, I am allowed to not like things and change my mind, but then everyone's going to think that I've failed and that I don't finish what I start. And there's like that whole spiral too.
I'm literally in the middle of that spiral right now.
Oh no.
I will share this with you and it'll be interesting if when this comes out, if I'm on the other side of it. I did a an interview on a major, major podcast a couple weeks ago. It has like multi-millions of downloads. Mm-hmm. And I, in preparation for it, invited a bunch of my clients to come to the studio, and I wanted to practice some of the things I wanted to talk about on that. So all these clients knew that it was happening. I recorded it like 4 weeks ago, and it has not come out.
Was it supposed to? Was it scheduled to?
I think so. So I'm like, okay. Oh my God.
So you're freaking out that it's terrible.
Was it so bad that it didn't come out? Or did I completely misunderstand the timeline? And like, I haven't heard from the producers. So are they ghosting me? Like, am I terrible? What the, oh my God.
So you're saying you're just like the rest of us with all of these fears.
Just like the rest of you. And then if it never comes out, there is like one version of a future where I'm like, oh my God, I'm so ashamed. I'm so embarrassed. Like, I must not be as good at this as I think I am. And then the other side of it is like, oh my gosh, this is a great story I can mm-hmm. use when I have other people come to me and they're like, I'm freaking out about this. You could be like, I did it too and I survived. Or if it does come out, then I have a big learning lesson of like, Jen, what are the questions you didn't ask to give you the confidence you needed to just release it, mm-hmm. let it go?
Right. Oh, it's so hard.
And it's so uncomfortable. And it's so hard to be so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We just want to make the feeling of the being uncomfortable just go away as soon as possible.
Right. Yeah. But, okay. So you actually, I'm gonna throw a little bit of Jen Waldman at you, because you were brought up in an interview with Brené Brown, who
I know.
Oh my God. Love. I know, we have to talk about it. And your name was brought up, and the idea of the first pancake metaphor, mm-hmm. Which I think you so beautifully described and put into just a really wonderful way. Can you explain what the pancake metaphor is and how it applies to this yes. exact situation?
And then we could maybe talk about how I didn't know if I would live through hearing my name in Brené Brown's mouth. Okay. So we all know, because we've all made pancakes, that the first one usually doesn't turn out very good. Mm-hmm. It's overcooked on one side. It's undercooked on the other side. It's a weird shape. It's like burnt. And very often that first pancake goes in the trash, or you just eat it yourself. Like, you would never serve it to your guests. You would serve it to yourself, but not mm-hmm. to your guests. And we accept that because it is as low stakes as a pancake, that it's going to take the second, third, fourth pancake to actually make something good. In our creative work, we put this very unrealistic pressure on ourselves to make the third or fourth pancake first. And so what I do with my clients is encourage them to make the first pancake. You don't have to share it. You don't have to give it to anyone else, but you've got to give yourself something to react to, so you know how you need to adjust the heat or adjust the size or adjust the thickness of the batter so that you can do better work on the next try. So there's just this overwhelming pressure. I think a lot of it has to do with these reality TV competition shows where you don't get to see the whole process. And P.S. I enjoy those shows, but I know that reality TV is not real. Where you see someone make something amazing on the first try. So implementing this idea of I'm committing myself to always making a first pancake, I know it's not going to be great, and then I give myself permission to get better and better. And I think, going back to the previous story, bringing my clients in to hear me talk out loud about some of the things I thought I might share on that podcast, first pancake, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know when 3 p.m. hits and you're just ready to call it a day and crawl into bed? I've tried everything from quick power naps to giant cups of coffee, but I finally found something unlike anything I've ever tried. The Suns Up Mushroom Coffee Mix from Plant People. I pour a packet in my afternoon coffee. You can add it to any drink of your choice, hot or cold. And it gives you that gentle boost of energy and clarity to get through that afternoon slump. And what I love about Plant People products is that all of their powders and drops and gummies are formulated without sugar, food dyes, gelatin, and high fructose corn syrup. And they're all doctor formulated and lab tested.
We have a special offer just for our Obsessed listeners. For 15% off any purchase at any time, use code OBSESSEDWITHTHEBEST at checkout. That's code OBSESSEDWITHTHEBEST for 15% off any Plant People product. For more information, just scroll down to the bottom of the show notes for this episode.
This is a metaphor I think about so much, and just naming it and normalizing it and just knowing that's a fact. There's gonna be a first pancake for literally anything. It could be trying a new outfit. It could be like whatever it is. It could be trying your makeup a different way. Like whatever you're trying for the first time, there's gonna be a first pancake. And I think about this so much because I went to a college prep school for high school. It was very academically rigorous and challenging. And it was like everyone was taking college level, college credit, AP, everything. If there you had a B, it was like meeting. It was like, we're all concerned. We're all, and it was really like, if you do not have all of your sources listed and your research paper and all your ducks in a row, like don't even bother showing up. Like it was very much that. And so in my early 20s, the fear of the first pancake stopped me from trying so many things. And I wish I would have learned this at like 23 instead of at like 28, you know, which like you can't go back. But, you know, we wouldn't have this podcast also without the first pancake.
We've had so many first pancakes with this podcast.
And even,
my God.
Tina, even before it was a podcast, I was feeling like I wanted a platform or to have interviews and to talk to people. So I was like, maybe it's YouTube. And those YouTube videos are so cringy I look back on now because I had no idea what I was doing. But like without that and figuring out, oh, maybe this isn't the thing. And then like Tina was supposed to come on as a YouTube guest. And then without us connecting, and then there like would not be a podcast. And also our first images for the show, we were in quarantine.
Yeah.
So they were cell phone selfies. Like, which old me would have never allowed that to, I would have been like, no, we have to wait. We have to wait to put the show out until we have the shoot. But we're like, you know what? This is what we got.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I know I look back on my first episode of my podcast. We tried to do 10 episodes in one. We tried to talk about every possible thing we had ever learned in life ever.
Yes.
Yes. For your whole life.
For your whole life. Okay, so speaking of your podcast, tell us about it. It's called The Long and the Short of It. Tell us about it. What do you love about it? And tell us about your co-host, too.
Oh, my co-host is this amazing man, Peter Shepherd. He's a 6'7" Australian. He is a really successful and renowned leadership coach. And we met because of a math error that I made. It was
great. We love that.
I know. I'm realizing the theme for like all the stories I'm sharing is like this really unfortunate mistake happened. And then this amazing thing came out of it. So I was enrolling in Seth Godin's Alt MBA program, which is amazing. And I highly, highly recommend to anyone who is looking to know themselves better in a cohort learning experience. Anyway, I decided I was going to sign up for a time zone other than my own because my daughter was a lot younger then and I wanted to be able to do bedtimes. So I was like, I'm going to sign up for the 3 hours. Even now, as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, which math was I doing? 3 hours later, I'm like, I'll start class at midnight and I'll go till 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And I accidentally did 3 hours in the other direction. So I ended up in the Pacific group and Pete was the coach for that group. The moment I met him, I was like, oh my God, this guy is seriously the real deal. So I scheduled a private session with him and I said, I want you to ask me all of the hard questions. We got on the call. Unbeknownst to me, he was spiraling. And he now talks about this because he's like, she thinks I'm a coach. Like, that's not really what I do. Like, I'm doing this on the side. And like, here's this person asking me for this coaching. So we get on the call. He asks me a couple questions. They blow my mind. And I'm like, I can't live without you. So I hired him as a coach, even though he wasn't coaching. So I think I was his first client. like his first private client. And a couple months in, I said something to him about how, I think this is how the story goes. I wonder if he would tell it differently. I said something to him like, you know, we're such a sight gag that if we ever did a podcast together, we should call it The Long and the Short of It.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That is amazing.
And he's like, well, I've been wanting to do a podcast. And I'm like, yeah, so have I. Huh.
He's like, oh, actually,
maybe we should just record these conversations. And now we're like 250 something episodes in.
That is so cool. And I love your podcast. You know, they're pretty short, condensed, you know, quick episodes. I love to just throw it on while I'm getting ready in the morning because it's just, it's inspirational. You guys get down to the nitty gritty of stuff. You're down to the nuts and bolts, but you're also like really super honest about like big failures and big successes. And it's really such an encouraging, I was telling Alex when I first got here this morning, I was like, Jen to me is like an accessible Brené Brown or Glennon Doyle. Like she's the one that like we can touch.
Oh my gosh. Focused on creative.
Yes. Wow. And it's just, it's so cool that you're so accessible to us and to, you know, all the artists that you, you know, foster and take care of.
Wow. I really, really appreciate that. I realized that my podcast episodes are shorter than the origin story of the podcast I just told.
Well, our podcast episodes are not short, so it's perfect for us. We do an hour, so like you can tell us the whole thing.
Absolutely.
I want to get some of your business tips. Mm-hmm. So you talk about a quarterly review a lot, and again, everything you talk about, this can be applied to models, voiceover actors, makeup artists, stylists. I mean, you name it in this business. You talk about the importance of the quarterly review. Can you talk about what that means?
I can't wait to talk about this because I just did mine the other day. I did it alongside a bunch of my clients. So I ran a workshop and we all met on Zoom to do our quarterly review. When I announced the quarterly review on Instagram, which I don't usually use Instagram for that purpose, but I was like, let's see what happens. An actor chimed in and was like, who I didn't know, and commented something like, you know, I think it's really unfortunate that that we're having to, you know, worry about money so much. And I totally get why you're doing this, but I just wish you weren't doing this because it puts the wrong idea in actors' heads. And I was like, I really wish this person would come because the subject of money came up maybe 1% of the time. Because as artists, we can't use money as the metric to know if we're making progress the way you can use money as a metric in other industries that have a more logical path.
And yet we are a business.
Completely.
And we would like to be making money. Yes. And there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, it's just different. It's different. Like you said, it's not this like linear, you do this, you make this amount. After 2 years, you get a raise. It's not like, it's not structured for us.
Correct. And so artists are measuring in all different forms of currency. And just like in a financial review, when you would look to see, you know, are we profitable this quarter and by how much and where can we cut expenses and where do we want to add investment and what are some of our financial goals for the next quarter? Artists have got to be looking at this in terms of how many new people am I meeting on a regular basis? How am I improving my understanding of the artistic landscape and who is actually shaping the future of the art that I'm working in? For actors, part of it is looking at how auditions have been going, how based on how many times you are submitted for something, how many of those are actually returning an audition. When you are auditioning, how many of those are returning a callback? How far along in the process are you getting? What kind of material is resonating? What kind of material isn't? So I believe so strongly that running a good artist business is, of course, you want to be profitable, but you've also got to look at what are the other things that I'm doing that are working or not working. So part of what I do in the quarterly review is we look at what are the things that are working? What are the things that are not working? I mean, this is like a very broad overview. And then what am I going to do about it? Because to just know it isn't enough. I have to be able to talk about it with my agents. I need to be able to talk about it with my coaches. Are there things I'm willing to let go of? Are there areas I want to invest in? Are there people I want to invest in?
This is so smart, and your kind of multi-pronged approach, because it's not one thing. It's not the auditions. It's not the money. It's not the job. This, you know, so this makes me think of, I had a month where I did this workshop of a play at the Actors Studio. Huge wit, like so cool. Paid nothing, okay? Yep. But like dying to do that. It was amazing. The same month, I got this amazing fit modeling job where I made a lot of money. So like to me, huge win. Best month ever, because I both made a lot of money and got to do something that really fed my soul and was new and inspiring. And that's the dream month for me. But it's not one thing. It's not because of the money, and it wasn't just because of the job. And it's a collection of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I find really helpful, and next time you do your quarterly review, maybe you'll incorporate this in, is I like to use this concept of zooming out to zoom in. So I like to think about years into the future. You know, when I'm doing my annual beginning of the year looking ahead, I sometimes go as far out as 10 years from now. I'm like, what do I want to be doing? Like, who do I want to be with? Where do I want to be in my life 10 years from now? And then zoom back to now. When I'm doing the quarterly review, I think a little bit more short term, like 2 or 3 years. And then I go, okay, so if 2 years from now, for example, well, I'll use a client as an example who said, I really want to be known. I want people, when they hear my name, to know who I am 2 to 3 years time. And I go, okay, so for the next 3 months, where do you need to be focusing to make that real 2 to 3 years from now? And this client was on tour. So what she did was she reached out to the person who was in charge of PR and marketing for the tour and said, if opportunities come up for morning shows, for being quoted in an interview, for someone doing a puff piece in a newspaper, photo shoots, whatever, I don't care if I have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do it. I'm raising my hand and I want to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's all of these media opportunities that then come in because she was able to say, down the road, I really want people to know who I am. And someone else might have, you know, 2 to 3 years from now, I want to own a home. So then in this coming quarter, let's figure out how we could be saving more money, earning more money, and saving more money. So those longer term projections can really help you hone in on the current set of priorities.
So guys, Tina and I love therapy. We have weekly FaceTime therapy sessions, and it's what gives us the tools to help us through all the things that come up in life: relationship, career issue, self-esteem building, learning boundaries, you name it. So BetterHelp offers easy, accessible, and affordable virtual therapy options. So first of all, finding a therapist can be really daunting. And with BetterHelp, you don't have to do any of the research because they will do that work for you and they'll match you with a therapist in under 48 hours. Second, it's incredibly convenient because you don't even have to leave your home. BetterHelp offers video, phone, and live chat sessions. It's honestly always a good time to invest in yourself and invest in your mental health. So give BetterHelp a try and see for yourself why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp. We have a special offer just for our obsessed listeners. So for 10% off your first month of professional virtual therapy, just go to BetterHelp.com and enter code OBSESSED at checkout. That is BetterHelp.com with code OBSESSED at checkout for 10% off your first month of virtual therapy. For more information, just scroll down to the bottom of the show notes for this episode. And thank you, BetterHelp, for sponsoring this podcast. I like the concise way you put it, zooming out to zoom in, because it literally is all in the baby steps. But I think sometimes we get stuck in, because that's creative work of figuring out what are those baby steps. Mm-hmm. Like what are the tiny baby steps that I can like put in my calendar and do every week? Sometimes that's hard to figure out.
Well, I think also being able to look back and see all that you've accomplished
Yeah.
You know, taking note of that is so important too, because oftentimes when I feel like so stuck and so like, what am I even doing? I look back at, I kind of make it just a quick journal entry of like, what have I done in the last 3 months? Wow. Yep. Okay. Actually, I've done a lot. And I think that's just as valuable as looking forward too.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I'm doing the quarterly review, I spend probably 60 or 70% of the time looking back, going, okay, what did I learn? What did I accomplish? And maybe 30% of the time projecting forward. I have a client, Nathaniel Sullivan. He's such a genius. And he added this step to his own looking back that I love so much, which was, you know, he does the catalog of accomplishments, like what have you done that feels like an accomplishment in the last couple months? And then he adds so that, and then fills in the blank. So there's like a purpose that you're able to name. So if it is, so in my next quarterly review, I'll say, oh, I was a guest on Obsessed with the Best so that I could share ideas about creativity and forecasting a better future to those listeners. So I understand the purpose in it. I just love that.
Oh, that's so, especially given all the stories that you shared with us of what could be considered failures or, you know, roadblocks, how those turned into something really productive and great. I love that.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That's such a great idea. I've never done it for the challenges part. I've done it for the accomplishments. That's what I borrowed from Nathaniel. Okay. But okay, now I'm adding that to my quarterly review for next time.
Yeah, Tina's brain, your brain immediately went to like, okay, this was a setback, but maybe was it? Like, how did it actually help me with whatever this, that, or that, you know? That's
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Oh, okay.
That's really cool.
See, our juices are flowing. I love this.
So Jen, you're kind of a little fresh to me, so I want to get your take on just two nitty-gritty business things just really quickly. Great. So first of all, agent-client relationships you mentioned earlier. So I just want to give quickly your I want to hear quickly your take on that relationship and how you coach people through it.
Oh, yes. So there are lots of different kinds of successful agent-client relationships, and it really depends on who is the agent, who is the client, and how do they need to work to feel like they're working at their best? So I have some clients who really want an agent who cares about them, who knows something about their personal life, who understands when they're like, I'm having feelings, any kinds of feelings. And then I have other clients who are like, I don't want my agent to be up in my personal business. I just want someone who is a business shark. They could be mean to me. I don't care. Like, I just want them to get me the best deals. So depending on what kind of person you are, those two extreme ends of the spectrum, one might be really good for you. One might be really bad for you. It depends on who you are. So I do think part of the work on behalf of the client is to understand what are you actually expecting your agent to be for you and to do for you? Because you might be in a relationship with someone who that's not what they do. That's not how they are. And if you can better understand their approach, you can start to heal relationships that are a little broken. So that's just the first thing, is understanding that agents are humans with personalities and skills and strengths and weaknesses, just like we are. I will say that regardless of the agent's personality, the best agent-client relationships I've seen are the ones where people are able to communicate clearly with each other, regardless of tone, whether it is harsh or floral and kind. Being able to communicate honestly and clearly is the key. The other really excellent agent-client relationships I've seen are the ones where the client does not expect the agent to be a manager, because an agent is not a manager. The client has got to be able to name the kinds of projects they're interested in, the kind of people they want to work with. The client has got to be able to say when an audition comes in that feels like a total miss, no, I'm not going in for that. Thank you so much, but I'm going to pass on that one. So I do think a lot of the dysfunctional relationships I've seen between agents and clients are ones where the client has not been clear about the kind of career that they want. So the agent is working really hard to build a career that is not the career that the client wants.
Great points. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing I want to get your point of view on with how you coach your people is with self-tapes. And it's the new normal. And the pros are, you know, if there's an actor with a disability, they don't have to pay for a cab. You don't, if you're in another city or you don't have to drive for 3 hours to get to Santa Monica, you can work your full-time job with health insurance and do your audition at midnight. The cons are you're not meeting these people in person, and also the tech screen time, the looking at your own face kind of editing. So I just love to get a few kind of words of wisdom that you tell the people that work with you.
Yeah. Well, self-tapes they're here. They're not going anywhere. In the theater world, they seem to have really replaced the first in-person audition almost entirely. Callbacks are happening in person. I guess to your point, when you're not available to go to the callback in person, you can put things on tape. But I find myself giving the same advice over and over and over again to my clients, most of whom are taping for theater. So what I'm about to say does not necessarily apply for TV and film, which I guess is the first point. Auditioning for theater is not the same as auditioning for TV and film. And there is an industry standard framing for TV and film, which if you go back and, you know, you go to YouTube and you type in whoever famous person's screen test, you'll see what it is, right? But for theater, as a director, I need to know you can use your body. So many of the theater actors are doing a shot that is just too tight. It is not enough information for me to know if you can stand on a stage and compel me from head to toe. So most of the time I'm giving advice to make your shot wider, to get away from the wall. So if you're using the blue Amazon pop-up screen, that is pretty industry standard for TV and film stuff. But in theater, we haven't been doing self-tapes enough to say what is and is not industry standard. And again, this idea that it's a full body art form. So I'm telling people to get away from the wall, which means very often abandoning their blue background in favor of something else. The third would be, are these the kind of tips you wanted?
Please.
Perfect.
Okay.
We love actionable takeaways. Yes.
Okay, great. So the third is move your gestures into the frame. So very often I know that someone is moving, but I literally can't see it because their arms are doing something down below. Or in some cases, people are doing things with their legs. I'm like, I literally can't see your legs. So pull the gestures up into the frame. And then the fourth, for people who are singing, if they're auditioning for musicals, is that your music's too soft. So most people are setting their sound level based on the beginning of the song, and then they get to this louder, higher section, and suddenly I can't hear the accompaniment. So the size of the performance then feels too big because they don't have that support that they need from the accompaniment. So I encourage people to set their levels based on the loudest and highest part of the song, or if you have someone who's actually helping you with the tape, because I do a lot of these with my clients, I hold the Bluetooth speaker in my hand. I move it closer to the mic when the song is loud and the singer's loud, and farther from the mic when the singer's soft, which is so silly, but it makes such a huge difference.
But if there was a sound person there adjusting levels, that's what they would do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? On the little board. No, this is
that's
so helpful.
Brilliant.
It's brilliant. Yeah. At the beginning of the season, we actually had a casting director on for commercials and TV, and her self-tape directions are completely different. Mm-hmm. So the takeaway is it's depending on what you're going in for, it's a whole different, you know, checklist of things to think about. Yeah. So that
they
was really helpful.
Different.
Yeah. I realize I left out one of my most important tips, which is fire your reader and get a better reader.
Okay.
I have so many people who are like, well, I'm going to read with my husband. I'm like, is your husband an actor? No. I go, okay, well, then your tape's not going to be as good as it would be if you were reading with an actor.
Your actor friend up the street, your whoever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, Jen, you cover the whole thing of being an artist, being a person in the world, being a leader, being an entrepreneur. I mean, you just nailed it. And your studio, JWS, is also nailing it too. So what are you looking forward to working on or building with JWS now that you've accomplished so much already?
I actually feel like I'm in this transition moment where I'm really trying to understand what the next chapter is. During the pandemic, I was so focused solely on the artist community because they were in so much pain and needed the creative outlet. I was 24/7, all artists, all the time. Now that we're, can't say we're out of it, but you know, we're late pandemic season right now. I'm looking at how I can get back to bringing more of the creativity and leadership ideas into these less creative spaces and how I can bring the JWS community along for that ride, because they have so many incredible skills and ideas that other people would really benefit from. So I don't know what it actually looks like yet, but I've been doing so much brainstorming recently around how can I take this amazing artist community and bring it into these other spaces. So ask me again in a couple of months, I'll probably have a better answer, but I think I'm really trying to build the Venn diagram of the work that I'm doing at JWS and then the possibility of the work I could be doing in some of those other spaces.
I mean, my big takeaways from you are you have a passion for bringing art into communities that are seen as artless and coaching people to have the courage to be creative. Like, those two things I think are so incredible and so needed and so well articulated. And that, to me, that's what I'm going to think of when I think of you.
I love that so much. Thank you.
So Jen, okay, before we let you go and wrap up here, we've got some rapid fire questions that we like to ask our guests. So we're just going to shoot them at you. Just give us the first thing that comes to mind. The first one is, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Pay attention.
Perfect, simple, to the point. Do you have a favorite book?
Or
it could be your favorite book right now.
Much.
It could be your favorite book of the month.
Well, my favorite book of all time is The Year of the King by the late Sir Anthony Sher.
Oh, okay.
Great. I've never heard of it. Can't wait.
Is there a beauty product that you are loving right now that you can't live without?
Yes. So I found it on Instagram. It's a company called Musely.
Okay.
I've seen them on Instagram, but I have not looked into it.
Okay. So this isn't a quick fire answer, but
please, tell us.
That's okay.
And Tina knows this because I said this to her before. As I'm getting older, I'm getting like these darker spots on my face, which is, I think, old sun damage. And I tried everything to try and alleviate it. And then I saw this thing on Instagram and it was like, the dark spots will disappear in 30 days. I was like, okay, well, I'll try it. And it actually works. So
Musely.
There's an actual dermatologist on the other end. You have to like take all these close-ups of your face.
I like
that's
that.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then they track you. So you're in conversation with the dermatologist through the whole thing. But my face looks really different.
Your skin
without
is,
makeup
yeah,
on.
Your skin looks great.
Your skin's incredible. Mm-hmm. So it is working. It's very much working. So is there a woman right now who's really inspiring you that comes to you off the top of your head?
Oh, yes. Well, she's a client of mine, Shireen Ahmed. I talk about her a lot because she represents to me everything that possibility looks like. So she's an amazing artist who has a degree in something other than theater. Her career has been pretty groundbreaking in terms of the path she's able to forge as a Egyptian American woman who is breaking all of these molds. She is so gorgeous. You'll check out her website. She's so beautiful, but she has a mission behind all of the work that she does as an actor. And so there is this driving sense of purpose behind every single choice she makes that feels like it is bigger than herself. So when I look at like what, who is an actor that other actors could look up to and go, yes, like, this is a person who is doing everything on purpose, mm-hmm, and did it all in a, at the beginning in a really scrappy way. Shireen.
Can you say her full name one more time?
Yes. Shireen Ahmed. A-H-M-E-D.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Thank
I can't
you. She'll be playing Iolanthe at Carnegie Hall later this month.
Oh my God. That's awesome. I just got chills. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Jen, where can we find and follow you and keep up with you and sign up to work with you and all of the things?
So on the socials, I'm at Jen Waldman. My personal website is jenwaldman.com. The studio website is jws.community. And you can listen to the long and the short of it anywhere you get your podcasts.
And all of this will be available in our episode notes. So if you missed that, you can just head to the episode notes of this episode and they'll all be there for you.
Jen, thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you. I'm so excited to keep following you. This has been so great.
It is such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Don't forget to follow, rate, and review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And for more content, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a follow at Obsessed with the Best Pod on Instagram and TikTok.
Hosted on dimlywit.com.